Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, which airs here on Friday afternoons until next month when it will be an hour of comedy, which airs every Sunday night from 9 to 10. Have you got that straight? Very good. Let's continue on then. We're dealing with Father's Day. Now, Father's Day, as you all know, is the day which precedes Ugly Tie Day. And you can see all the men in their cars on the freeways frantically changing their ties before they get to the office. You can also, in the elevators all over town, see on the necks or around the necks of those intrepid souls who will brave the ridicule of their co-workers some really ugly ties. Anyhow, saluting fathers in this program, we will hear from Howie Mandel, Billy Connolly, Bob Newhart, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, W.C. Fields and Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Groucho Marx and Shelley Berman. A nice little selection. I think all fathers. Fathers all. I don't know if Dudley Moore has kids. Anyhow, let's get started with Howie Mandel.
I just became a dad. What? No, come on. No, don't applaud. Don't applaud. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, this is corny. But I went into the delivery room, right? And so did my wife because I wanted her support. And I was in there, and this is I'll never forget this day. It was the most beautiful day of my life. I remember looking my wife right in the eyes and going, this is beautiful. I mean, this is it. This is life. This is creation. This is what it's all about. And I'll never forget this. She looked right back at me. She looked at me right in the eyes, and she said, ah! She always says that. And now I have a daughter. I have a little girl. No, but think about this. Think about this. Look at me and think, look and think about, I am somebody's dad. Isn't that weird? Guys are gonna have to come to the door and meet me.
I have a little person at home called Daisy, so a wee tiny person, nearly 2 years of age. And I was there when she was born, and I was going to talk to you about that. Because some of you in this room, whose partners will produce children, you will be coaxed and then bullied into attending the event to go and watch the arrival of the aforesaid person on Earth, in the room watching it happening. I was there. I was that soldier. Don't go. Fight it till the last. Do not give in. It is many things. It's everything they say. It's wonderful. It's a miracle. It's miraculous. It's fantastic. It's unbelievable. It is not a spectator sport. Don't go. You are not welcome. They give you the green suit and the hat and the mask and the Danish clogs. You feel such a wally. And it's so disappointing. I was in there for ages. Not one person asked for hot water and towels. Not one. Now, I know a thing or six about childbirth. I've seen a few movies in my life. Hot water and towels, Betsy, and keep it coming. Not one. I felt so stupid. Sitting there with my two kettles. People laughing. It's awful. What were they doing with all that boiling water? They must have known a birth method that we don't know anymore. The boiling water method. Sounds a bit bloody painful to me. I think the idea was they get a bucket of boiling water and they say, if it's not here in 5 minutes, this goes up your kilt, okay. Personally, I think they were washing their hair. Because it was hard to wash your hair in the Old West. You had to get the water for the pump and build a fire. So the doctors went, these buggers know nothing about it. Hot water and towels in the room and don't come in.
They say that a man can never have a child because he could never stand the pains that a woman goes through in delivering a baby. And this is true. But a man does go through a little hell, too, you know. And after you're all finished and you have the baby, you begin to wonder how the world ever got overpopulated, because everybody swears, that's the last one, that's the last, I'm not going through that again, I'm not going through that. What happens, you read books, and you can read all the books in the world, and it isn't going to cover it, you know. But when it actually happens, believe me, you will turn to jelly like I did and like every other expectant father does. My wife is very calm about it. I'm lying in bed, and I just heard some noise or something, a suitcase, and I wake up, and I say, what's the matter, honey? And she says, I think we better go to the hospital. Now, my immediate reaction is to just panic, but you've read in these books that you should be very calm. So I tried to be calm. I said, okay, honey. I said, now, have you been timing the contractions? She said, yes, they're about 5 minutes apart. Well, now, one of the books said this means 6-7 hours, and we're 45 minutes from the hospital. But that's another thing to find out, that all obstetricians, any self-respecting obstetrician, will always have his office 45 minutes away from the hospital that he practices at, you see, and it's usually about an hour away from your home. This is for the father's benefit, so he can go crazy on the way to because you always have visions of having to deliver the baby, you know, and this can turn you into deal. Anyway, I'm trying to be very calm. I said, all right, honey, you finish packing the suitcase. And by the way, you never use anything in the suitcase. They tell you to pack a suitcase. This is just to give the wife something to do while the husband is getting dressed, because you take the little bag down to the hospital and they shove it off in a corner and they give it to you when you leave, you know, and it's never open. So I went in the bathroom and I shaved and I put the Band-Aids on my face. Came out, you know, and I said, well, okay, honey, I think we'd better go. And she said, aren't you going to call a doctor? I said, of course, that's very good. He should know about it. He said, we should. So he can be there, or at least a representative of his. So I went into the den very calmly, looked up his number in the phone book, and dialed his number, picked up the phone, and said, baby! And hung up, and we went down, we got in the car, you know, we're driving along, and we're about 15, 20 minutes on our way to the hospital, and my wife says, you know, you call the doctor. I said, yeah, honey. I said, Dr. Miller would be down there about half an hour, you know, and nothing. She said, Dr. Miller's my dentist. What the hell do you call my dentist? So I said, well, they talk to other doctors, and, you know, I'm sure he'll know what to do, you know. If a cab driver can deliver a baby, certainly a dentist can, you know. And, of course, whenever you're in a hurry, there's always two people in front of you who are practicing for a parade of some kind. They're going about 2 miles an hour, you know. And my wife is timing the contractions now on the auto clock, and they're not too reliable anyway, you know. And they're about 3 minutes apart, and this is beginning to worry me a little bit. So I'm zooming down Wilshire, and I finally get to the hospital and figure, you know, finally, while we're here, there are a lot of doctors around and nurses, so my concern should be over, but it's not over. This is really when your troubles start. This hospital we went to is a strange hospital because they have a parking lot, and you have to put a quarter in this slot, and then the gate comes up. You know, they don't work on the honor system, apparently. They figure, you know, you're going to drop your wife off and then take off to Acapulco or something, so, you know, till it's over. And it's not the easiest thing to hit at 20 miles an hour, which is, which is about what I was doing when we arrived at the hospital. But finally, we got inside, and you go to the admitting office, you know, and there's a nurse there. She says, how do you do, sir? And what is your name? I said, my name is Newhart. She said, all right, Mr. Newkirk, and is this your wife? I said, no, this is a hitchhiker. She was she was hitchhiking down here to the hospital, and it's, you know, it's right on my way to work, and it isn't that far out of the way, so I figured I'd drop her off. And she said, well, we have to have the husband sign the paper. I said, I am the husband. I was just a little attempted humor there. And she said, now, sir, do you have Blue Cross or any other hospital plan? And I'm getting a little panicky now. I said, look, could I possibly, you know, answer the questions while you take my wife upstairs, you know? And she said, well, no, we need your wife to sign the form at the end of it, you know? So I said, well, if you wait about 15 minutes, all three of us can sign can sign this form. That's very important. And with this, she panicked because she wasn't a nurse, it turned out. She's a clerk at the hospital, and she wouldn't have known what to do, you know, if the baby came there. So she got her in the elevator and got her upstairs. And they have two wonderful rooms, wonderfully titled rooms. They call one the labor room, and the other one is called the hard labor room. You know? In other words, you're going to scream your head off in this room, you know, which makes the wife feel great. You know? And you're allowed now to stay with your wife for a while until she goes into the hard labor room. So finally, they take my wife into the hard labor room, and you can find nothing out from any hospital people if you're an expectant father. You are the lowest form of life in a hospital. No one, even maintenance people, will have nothing. Will have nothing to do with it. And there are people running around, you know, with various assorted pans of one kind or another, with worried looks on their faces. And I don't think they're nurses. They're just people that are hired to run around looking worried, because this makes the father feel better, you know, that they're concerned. And then they have the father's room. It's sort of a torture chamber that they've devised to drive the father nuts while the wife is having the baby. And this is filled with guys you just wouldn't believe, you know, they're all sitting like that. And there's one guy in there who has just had a baby, and he is superior to everybody else, you know. He's sort of gloating, you know. And of course, I'm trying to get information out of him, you know, and I say, gee, they just took my wife into the hard labor room. Like, what will it be, 15, 20 minutes, I guess? No. So, no. Oh, no. Mm. Oh, 5, 6, 7 hours. He says, you see that poor guy over there in the corner? 32 hours he's been here. And there's a guy in the corner, he's not making any sense at all. He's going, mom, mom, mom. So as I say, I don't know how the world ever got overpopulated, because we swore we would never do it again. But it has a happy ending, because we had a little son, Robert William, and he was 7 pounds, 14 ounces. And, oh, I became a father officially the other day. You're officially a father, you know, when the baby is born, but you aren't really a father until your baby has gone all over you. And my son went all over me the other day, and I'm a member of an exclusive fraternity now. But believe me, when it happens, it's wonderful.
Tell me, Charles, is it true your father was a gate leg table?
If it is, your father was under it, or...
Is that you, Roger?
Yes, Father.
Hey, a cup of tea in here for you, if you'd like one.
It's very kind of you, sir, but I've just come in from Raga, and I'm a bit grubby. I think I ought to go and have a shower first, sir.
Well, pour me a cup. There's a good chap, would you?
Certainly, sir. Yes, of course.
Thank you. How was school today?
Oh, much as usual. Thank you, sir, but I caught someone having a crafty smoke behind the wooden buildings. Had to give him rather a ticking off. Such a filthy habit, you know, sir.
It's a filthy habit, Roger.
Yes. There we are, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Roger?
Yes, sir?
Sit down. Roger, your mother and I were having a bit of a chat the other day, and she thought it might be a good idea if I was to have a bit of a chat with you.
A bit of a chat, sir?
A bit of a chat, yes, Roger, just... A bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
Well, there's nothing to be worried about, Roger. It's just that, well, to be perfectly frank, how old are you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, sir, I'm coming up to 18.
Just coming up to 18?
Well, on the verge.
On the verge of 18. Yes, well, I thought it might be a good idea to have a bit of a chat now, because I remember from my own experience that it was when I was just, you know, coming up to 18.
On the verge.
On the verge of it. That I first began to take a serious interest in the, the opposite number. Now, I don't know, Roger, if you know anything about the method whereby you came to be brought about.
Well, sir, some of the boys at school say very filthy things about it, sir.
This is what I was worried about, and this is why I thought I'd have a bit of a chat and explain absolutely frankly and openly the method whereby you and everybody in this world came to be. Roger, in order for you to be brought about, it was necessary for your mother and I to do something. In particular, it was necessary for your mother, to sit on a chair. To sit on a chair which I had recently vacated and which was still warm from my body. And then something very mysterious, rather wonderful and beautiful happened. And sure enough, 4 years later, you were born. Now, there's nothing unhealthy about this, Roger. There's nothing unnatural. It's a beautiful thing in the right hands, and there's no need to think less of your mother because of it. She had to do it, she did it, and here you are.
Well, sir, it's very kind of you to tell me. One thing actually slightly alarms me. I was sitting in this very chair yesterday, sir, and I vacated it, and the cat sat on it while it was still warm. Should we have it destroyed?
It's a lovely chair, Roger.
Cat, sir.
Destroy it? No, no, Roger, you don't understand. This thing of which I speak can only happen between two people who are married. And you're not married.
Not yet anyway, sir.
Not to the cat in any case. Well, Roger, now you have this knowledge about chairs and warmth. I hope you'll use it wisely.
Sir.
And take no notice of your school friends or what Uncle Bertie may say.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, they call him.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, and they're right, Roger. Your Uncle Bertie is a dirty, dirty man. He's been living with us now for 40 years, and it does seem a day too much. You know, if it hadn't been for your mother, Roger, I don't know where we'd have been. She's the only person who can really cope with Uncle Bertie. She's the only one who can really deal with him. I don't know if you realize this, Roger, but your mother even has to sleep in the same bed as Uncle Bertie to prevent him getting up to anything in the night. If only there were more people like your mother, Roger.
Well, I'm very pleased that you told me this, sir, because, as I say, I'm very glad I don't have to believe all those filthy things that the boys at school say. And only yesterday, Uncle Bertie said to me...
Take no notice of Uncle Bertie, Roger. He's a sick, sick man, and we should feel sorry for him.
Well, I'll try, sir. Well, thank you, sir. I wonder if I should take a cup of tea up to Mother while it's still...
I wouldn't do that, Roger. She's upstairs at the moment, coping with Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Dear old dad, we love you so.
Dear old dad, we are glad to be here with you on this day of days. And we swear always that we will be here on this day each year. Today, Father, is Father's Day, and we're giving you a tie. It's not much we know, it's just our way of showing you we think you're a regular guy. You say that it was nice of us to bother, but it really was a pleasure to fuss. For according to our mother, you're our father, and that's good enough for us.
Today, Father, is Father's Day, a day that we all revere.
The tie that you got didn't cost such a lot, but we will give you the same tie next year.
You tell us it was nice of us to bother, but it really was a pleasure to fuss through.
For they say a child can only have one father, and you are the one for us.
Yes, you are the one for us.
Hello. Hello, Midget. Midget? Hi. It's me. Your father. What do you mean, who? It's your father. You recognize my voice? You've been living with me for 15 years. Annie, I am on the office phone. I've told you 100 times, when you're talking to me on the office phone, you call me Daddy, you call me Father, but you don't call me Goofboy. You understand? Nobody's listening, but they may overhear it, and it just sounds ridiculous to have a kid calling me Goofboy. That doesn't right. All right. Call me Daddy. All right. Annie, reason I'm calling up, honey, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to get home before you leave tonight. Well, yeah, your mother called me this afternoon and told me about it. Are you happy? Your first date. 15 years old, your first date. Thrilled? So am I. Congratulations. Wonderful. I thought it would never happen. I'm just teasing you, honey. I knew it was going to happen. I'm just all excited about it. Your first big date. You thrilled? Yeah. Yeah, with a boy? No, I know it's with a boy. I know. No. Don't misunderstand. I know it. I just thought it was with a crowd or something instead of just one fella, huh? Going in a car. And is there another couple going along? Well, can you get another couple go along? Have you tried to get another couple? I think you'd have more fun if another couple was along, if you could arrange it. Well, that's all right. Annie, I'm not going to be able to get home tonight because I'm stuck here at the office, and your mother called me, told me all about this thing, and I just want to wish you well. It's your first big evening, and I'd like to be there, and I'm sorry, honey, but there's something I want to talk to you about, Annie. Shame it has to be on the phone, but it's a little something I should have talked to you about a few years back. Actually, your mother should have talked to you about this this subject, but she doesn't believe in it. Never mind what I mean. You'll learn. All right, now, Annie. Here's the thing. Now, don't rush me, honey. Now, I'm trying to think of a right way to say this. Clean. You're going out with a boy. Annie, boys and girls are different. I know you know, but I'm not talking about what you learn in school, honey. I'm not talking about boy grasshoppers and girl grasshoppers. I'm talking about people. A young boy is rotten. That's what he is. Rotten. Yes, I was, and I was rotten clear through to the core. Do I know? All right. I don't mean he's rotten. It's just that he has certain feelings, and everybody else has to have them as far as he's concerned, you see. Now, you're going to be together in a car. Annie, a car is a kind of a intimate enclosure, and it's a kind of a motel room on wheels, you see. Well, now, don't ask me to be specific. You'll learn in time what I'm talking about. Now, this boy is, and if I'm saying this crudely, if I'm saying this in a stupid, crude way, I'm sorry. Now, I'm just a businessman. I don't know from nothing, but you're my kid. And I want to talk to you about this. And if I'm embarrassing you, for Pete's sakes, try to forget it. You're a big girl. You're 15. You're not a baby. If you were in India, you'd be a mother by now. Of course, there's a lot of girls in Chicago who think they're in India. This kid is, he's going to spend some money on you. He's going to buy you a corsage, and he's going to feed you, incidentally, just a malted milk and a bacon lettuce tomato sandwich. Don't be a pig like you are with me, understand? All right. Eat easy. He's going to spend a few dollars, and it's hard-earned money, or it's his allowance, or who are you going with? Oh, him. Well, in his case, he's been risking his neck all week stealing hubcaps, hasn't he? All right. So it's gonna cost him a few dollars. He's entitled. Well, never mind what he's entitled to, I'll tell you. He thinks he's entitled to more, but I'm gonna tell you what. When he takes you home, Annie, stops in front of the door. He's gonna wanna kiss you goodnight. Now I'm gonna give you an order. You come across, you understand? You give him the kiss. No head turning at the last minute, no sweating, no blushing, give him the kiss. All right? That's his business. The second kiss, Annie, that's your business. The third kiss, my business. All right. All right, now, Annie, I'm sorry if I've said the wrong things to you at any time, because I don't want to embarrass a young lady, and you are, and you probably know all about this, and I just want to make sure in case there was a little spot you missed when you cleaned the window. I just want to be there to say it. And Annie, I'm not going to worry about you. Your mother and I are not going to worry about you. I'm not even going to set a time for you to come home. I'll tell you to come home at a reasonable hour, but you be the decider of that. That's all I'm going to say. We're not going to worry. You go out and relax and have a good time. When you get home, look for me. I'll be in the window. Goodbye.
And there you have it. That's our salute to fathers on Father's Day. We heard from Shelley Berman, Groucho Marx, W.C. Fields, Charlie McCarthy, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, Bob Newhart, Billy Connolly, and Howie Mandel. So go on out there, dads, and have a wonderful Father's Day. And don't do what you think they want to do. Don't let them talk you into Disneyland. You do what you want to do. It's Father's Day. And next week, it's going to be time for Equal Time for Moms. Basically, because last month in May, when I usually do my Mother's Day special, we were running the Stan Freberg shows. So we'll run them a month late and make it look like Mom is getting some equal time. And that's about it. What else is there to tell you? Then after that, there'll be a Bob and Ray show with Phil Proctor, and after that, a 4th of July special. So now you know what's coming up. Don't forget that this show is moving to Sunday nights from 9 to 10 starting in July. And the address is Bob Claster, C-L-A-S-T-E-R, at KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. And I'd love to hear from you and close a phone number so I can get a hold of you. And that's about it. So until next week, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening, wishing you a wonderful Father's Day, and reminding you, as always, to keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.